This is Remarkable. Welcome to Remarkable, a marketing podcast for podcasters who aren't marketers. I'm your host and teacher, Dave Mooring, and I want to know what it takes to stand out, get noticed, and build a committed audience of listeners and fans. I'm on a quest to find out what makes a podcast remarkable, and I invite you to join me each week as I interview other podcasters, experts, and marketers. The Remarkable Podcast is part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. If you'd like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. This is episode number 6. In this episode of Remarkable, I have a conversation with a veteran podcaster who has been podcasting for more than 8 years. He runs a niche podcast network that includes 8 shows with 20 different hosts, and they've produced over 4,300 episodes. They have an estimated 130,000 listeners in over 92 countries, which has helped them secure more than 30 sponsors per month. He has a wealth of knowledge in the podcasting space and has spoken at numerous conferences about podcasting and advertising. His thoughts on podcasting often conflict with much of the popular, accepted advice being shared today, and you'll get to hear firsthand where he disagrees and why. You'll also learn tips for finding a niche and understanding what your audience wants, as well as the importance of where to find them. You'll hear his tried and true criteria for finding a great host or co-host, tips for structuring your podcast network, and how to sell ads and find sponsors regardless of your download numbers. He also discusses what types of ads you should offer and which sell the best, and he shares some specifics on where you should be pricing your ads when you're first getting started. He's known as America's Horse Husband, and he's the founder of the Horse Radio Network. Here's Glenn the Geek. Glenn, welcome to Remarkable. I'm very glad to have you on the show, and I really appreciate you taking time to speak with me today.
Oh, no problem. I'm glad to be here. Always fun to talk about marketing.
Yeah, well, that's what I love to talk about, and podcasting, and you're the expert in podcasting. So was really looking forward to having you on here to share some of your wisdom and expertise with my audience here.
Terrific.
So let's just go over briefly about your background a little bit. Can you give us just in a couple of sentences what you do?
Yep. I was 15 years in financial sales, insurance, and investments. And then at the same time, we also owned an acting company called the Medieval Feasting Guild. We did 10 years, 450 shows. We did kind of a Benny Hill version of a medieval feast. Sold tickets. That was been pre-internet days when we had to do it the hard way.
Nice.
And had to market it the hard way because it was in pre-internet days, you know. So we did that. Learned a lot. I actually probably learned more in the acting company because it was all improv. And we were trained improvisational actors, which really helped me in sales. And it really helps today in podcasting.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, that whole thing. Whenever anybody asks me, I say, go take acting classes. When you're in college, take acting classes, especially improv. And then we got into married my wife, who was in the horse world, and we ended up in the products business in the 90s, ended up selling that company, consulted for many years with product companies in the horse world on marketing and sales. And then one day my brother said, hey, look, there's this podcasting thing. Some guy named Leo's doing it. I listen on my computer, and you ought to do that for the horses. And I said, what the heck, called my friend and Helena and said, hey, look, she's a techie also. And I said, there's this Leo guy. He's doing a podcast called This Week in Tech back 8, 9 years ago now.
Right.
And she said, we like to talk, so let's just do it. And we did it. We started with a Stable Scoop radio show. I started right away calling it the Horse Radio Network because I always had thoughts I was going to do 2 or 3. And now we're 9 years later, 4,300 episodes later.
Wow.
20 hosts, 8 different shows. And about 130,000 listeners now. So it it's grown a bit.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
We have this is what you're talking about marketing. We just billed our first month billing over 30 sponsors. We billed 32 in December. Wow. So I'm very excited about that too.
Yeah, congratulations on that. So let me back up a little bit because you just dumped a lot of great information just about your history there. But so were you familiar with podcasting when you decided to start back in 2000?
No, only what my brother said about Leo. And then I started listening to Leo a little bit. And then I was like, well, I'll call Helena, is also kind of a geek. And I was too, a little bit, of a geek. Not a coder or programmer, so to speak. Helena was more of that.
Right.
But we really didn't know what we were doing to start. Nobody knew back 9 years ago really what we were doing. We just did it. I always knew I wanted it to be a business because I didn't want to do it if it was just a hobby that just took up too much time.
Sure.
So like horses take up enough time as it is. So we always knew we wanted it to be a business. So we always had in the back of our mind that we were going to sell ads. And at that point, we thought they were going to be, yes, audio ads, but also that the more of the value would be at that point in the banner ads, because banner ads were what was big back then.
Yeah, absolutely.
And boy, were we wrong, because nobody ever came to the website. They found us on iTunes. And, about half found us on iTunes and half came to the website in the early days. And then the ones who came to the website were listening at work. And then more and more of them started falling off, and I'd get emails saying, I got in trouble. I can't listen at work anymore. So, that we have less and less listening at work all the time.
So why audio instead of, a blog or something like that back in the day?
That was easy. First of all, I can't write. I'm a terrible writer.
Okay.
I'm a terrible reader, too. So if there's ever anything that has to be read on the shows, they don't let me do it. One of my co-hosts does it. So that's why. And also I knew one of the things that horse people have is a lot of downtime. They're cleaning stalls, some of them an hour, 2 hours every day. They're cleaning the paddocks, shoveling poop, driving to horse shows takes forever in many cases. So there's a lot of downtime being a horse person. And I always knew that, that back then it was iPods, MP3 players, was a way that they could kill that downtime by downloading our shows. And then they had to manually move it over to their MP3 player. And it was a several-step process, and they would go out and listen. And I always knew that we needed to do long form because they were trying to kill time. And video wasn't going to work. It was too much work. It's too much editing. Back then, it was even worse.
Yeah.
Plus, one of the other problems we had with horse people is we had to bring the quality of the audio way down because most of them had dial-up, and some still do because they're on farms. They don't have good internet connections. And we knew that we had to bring the quality way down and just make it listenable so that they could get it at all. And that's why we did audio is simply because it was long format. And today, still, I will never do video. We kind of own the space in radio. And we called it radio because nobody knew what a podcast was back then either.
Right,
so
right.
Just call it online radio is how we describe it.
Now, how did you overcome? I've got some experience in marketing in the horse world a little bit. How did you overcome the technological gap? Because I know that there's a lot of people in that space that just aren't tech savvy.
I can tell you you've been marketing in the horse world. We all the time have marketers come into our world, the horse world, and think, they've been successful somewhere else, and they fail miserably in the horse world. And it's because horse people are addicted to one thing, and their life revolves around one thing, and that's their horse. You have to market to them where they are and differently. And, I tell that to new marketers coming in the horse world. They just don't believe you, right, Dave? I mean, you were there. You know the story.
Yeah.
It's a different market. They have a different mentality, and they're a different kind of people. And that's not bad. I'm one of them, right? I married one, and that's our world. We live in that world. But it is different. If you're going to succeed in this world, you have to market to your clientele. That's the first lesson when even doing a podcast, because really a podcast is nothing but then a form of entertainment and marketing to a specific group. And we knew that audience. We know what they like and don't like. But our biggest challenge in the beginning was technology. They were always 2 years behind. I was the second one to open a tack shop, a online store for selling tack and supplies or supplies in the 90s. We were the second ones to do that. So we've always had that problem. is getting people to understand the market or to understand the technology and how to listen. So pretty much when we started, we knew that we were going to be doing it for a couple of years before the horse world caught up. And that's, in fact, what really happened. It was a couple of years till they started coming on, and now they have pretty much caught up. You know, they were a long time in getting iPhones and stuff because they live rural. They couldn't get reception.
Yeah,
there was no reason to spend all that money for a phone that you didn't have any bars on.
Right. Even the people with the money that are running everything, the owners of the training facilities and things like that, they're always out in the field, hands on, always doing something.
Yes, and that's why we knew we had to eventually, what I wanted to do was start years ago so that when we got to the point where we are now, when podcasting is finally turning the corner and becoming mainstream, that we owned this space, that we were it in the horse world. And that happened. That's where we are now. Now, we spent a lot of years getting to that point, to the point where we are now, where technology has caught up in our space, in the horse world, and people are figuring it out or their kids are showing them.
Yeah, I'm thinking of somebody else. Let's say that there's somebody in the audience here that's listening has another niche or another industry that they feel like is maybe behind the times or is just barely catching on to technology and podcasting. What are your tips or what was your advice? How did you maintain and keep going for the first couple of years when you had very few downloads, very few listeners? What kept you going?
When you're marketing in a niche, like we are, any niche, it could be skiing, it could be anything. There's another very popular network, the Brewing Network, mm-hmm. and it's all about microbrews, and he owns that space. And no matter what niche you're marketing in, you've got to make friends, because we are out here by ourselves, you know, in the little podcasting world on our side of the fence. So what we knew is that in the beginning, when we had no listeners, we had to make friends with everybody who was anybody in the horse world. So we went to bloggers, we went to the biggest magazines that were in the horse world who were just coming online and figuring out the internet thing. And we said, hey, look, in exchange for us, in exchange for you coming on our shows and providing content, we would love for you to put our player, and we made this player, it was pretty simple back then. Mm-hmm. We made this player, you put it on your website so people coming to your website can click on it. It opens a pop-up window. They can surf around your site while listening to our shows. We both win. And that's what happened. We made friends. We now have 70 of those players around the horse world on websites everywhere. And that's how people listened in the beginning, was they found those players. Well, then we were able to educate them after they started listening to iTunes. You know, that was a major feat. We still don't have very many reviews on iTunes because we never asked for them, because it wasn't that important to us to ask for them and to get those ratings. It was more important for us to educate people how to get to iTunes in the first place.
Just how to get the content.
You know, I love all these tech guys. They have it so easy. They can just say, hey, look, go, you know, review my podcast in iTunes. I would have to explain how to do that. You know, so we were never focused on that. We were always focused on making friends. We knew that if we were going to be the biggest in the online radio space for the horse world, we had to make sure that everybody knew us, that everybody that was anybody in the horse world, blogger wise, magazine wise, big website wise, had to know who we were, and that they had to help us advertise. And that's how we started marketing. We have not spent a dime to this day on marketing.
Wow.
It's all been through relationship marketing. And when you're in a small space like this and you have very little money to start with, like most of us, right?
Yep.
Relationship marketing is the key. It's what's helped grow us to the point we are. And, oh, by the way, vice versa, we helped, as we got bigger, some of those brands grow to the point they are. So we have a relationship, I'll give you an example, with Horse Nation, which was a tiny little blog 5 years ago, mm-hmm. tiny little blog, and now has 100,000 followers on Facebook and is one of the most popular blogs in the horse world. And they come on every Monday to our live daily show and do an update from Horse Nation. And she's funny and she's entertaining. And we talk about a couple articles and we review them and we have fun with them. And, you know, we have grown together over that 5 years since they started. And now they're one of the tops in their space. So we've helped each other grow.
When you were reaching out to the magazines and the people that were just coming online, were you just looking up who the owner was? I mean, how did you go about
logistically just reaching out and contacting? Was it the relationships already, or?
I tried to figure out who the social marketing person was, right. Which in those days there really wasn't one. So, you know, somebody in the sales department or somewhere was assigned that job, right? And they were assigned to go out and figure out what, back in those days, what MySpace was, you know, and, you know, it really wasn't a full-time gig for anyone back then. So I'd go to that person. Well, they were always looking for help. And the other thing I did back then is I said, well, look, if we're going to be the leader in this space, now this is back when we first started and probably had 100 listeners. We invited everybody to Kentucky, did this on a shoestring too. I called up, I found 50 people that I knew that were kind of the leaders in internet marketing and for companies or wholesalers or retailers or blogs or magazines. And we had what we called a new media meetup in Lexington, Kentucky. And I called the horse park down there, biggest horse park in the country. And I said, look, we're going to have 50 of the most influential people in new media coming in. And after they said, what's new media? We don't even know what that is. they donated the room to us kindly. And we spent a weekend. Well, we did that for 3 years in a row. And it was hosted by the Horse Radio Network. Well, that got us out hugely to all of these very influential people. And we sat around for a couple of days and just talked about Twitter was just starting. Facebook had, you know, was just an inkling back then. But every year we'd cover the new things that were coming out and spend 2 days together. Well, those relationships today are what has bloomed into, a very large network.
Sounds like what you're saying is that for people that want to grow their audience, it's a lot of hands-on work. It's not necessarily sitting back or just looking to buy
some ads,
or shooting some emails out. It's really hands-on, getting dirty.
You're not going to post it on iTunes and you're going to have a million listeners. You know, there are certain celebrities that can do that, but they already have an audience. If you're just starting out, you're going to be doing it grassroots because you don't have the money to, you know, spend a ton of money on it on advertising either. So you're going to have, I tell everybody when they're starting their podcast, you have to make friends. You have to make friends that have an audience. And I don't mean just, you know, get them on your show as a guest because they're maybe going to promote you, maybe not. You have to have them on your show as a contributor. You have to find people in your space who are also looking for another outlet, another inexpensive way to advertise and make it a hand washing situation where you're helping each other. And that's really how we grew to the point we are now. That does not happen in 2 weeks. That's a long-term goal. But if you're planning on doing a podcast or anything, any business for 6 months or a year, and that's all you're planning it out anyway, don't do it. You're not going to be around. Mm. So you have to be thinking long-term, as well as, I realize, have to be paying the bills in the short term too. You know, if you're going to commit to anything, like I told you when I first met you, if you're going to commit to anything, it takes time, it takes effort. And if you want to grow it to a point where you're the leader in your space, then you're going to have to put a ton of time in. We just did a radiothon, 12 hours live on the air.
That's awesome.
Huge success. But it probably took my wife and I 300 hours in the last 4 weeks to get it together. Because we had 30 guests, we had hundreds of callers, we had 17 sponsors, we did almost 45 commercials during the day. All of that had to be prepared to make it sound like a true radio show, and it did. But it took a lot of prep time. I tell everybody, for an hour of podcasting time, you're spending 7 to 8 hours in pre and post.
Right.
For an hour of podcasting time, and that's probably conservative. There are times we spend more than that. And there are a lot of, you know, but that also includes marketing. The time you're spending sending thank yous to your guests that are also giving them instructions on how to put it on Facebook.
Right.
Everything you do is marketing. And that includes, you know, especially we're talking to podcasters here, that includes your guests. They're there to market for you. But if you just send them a link, half of them aren't going to do it. And I get that all the time. You know, hosts saying, well, my guests aren't posting it. Well, are you giving them exactly what to post?
Yeah, making it really easy.
You have to.
Yeah.
You have to make it to the point where in that email thanking them, it's a copy and paste. And you write it out for them. I was thrilled to be on such and
right.
such a show.
Yep.
We write it out. They copy it. They paste it. They're done. And they'll do that. they won't write it themselves 90% of the time because it takes too long and too much effort on their part.
Well, and they're scared they're going to say the wrong thing or it's not going to come across as professional.
Well, and they don't even know where to send.
Right.
You know, in most cases, you know, unless you're dealing with tech people, but we're not. So, you know, if you're in a niche market, you really have to educate all the way along with your guests, with your hosts, with everybody, your listeners. Everything is an education, and all of that comes back to marketing, right? Mm-hmm. Because if you're educating your listener, they can educate their friends. If they kind of don't know what they're doing and are just kind of half figuring it out, they're not going to talk to anybody about it. But if they know what they're doing and they're proud of it and they're really, you know, they're really into it, they'll go talk to everybody about it. So it's all of that is marketing.
Yeah, and one other aspect I'd like to touch on, if you don't mind, is so one aspect of marketing that I think a lot of people miss is the product itself. That's what I'm looking for, is not only picking a niche, but having something that's remarkable. So how did you come up with the content for the shows that you initially started? How did you know what people wanted to listen to?
I didn't. And I didn't do market research. I just determined what my wife and I like to listen to.
Okay.
We determined what we like to listen to. And in the early days with that first show, Stable Scoop, Helene and I, my co-host, you know, what we like to listen to is what we did. So if we were into it, we figured, well, somebody's going to listen. And, you know, after 3 months, there were 12 people that were listening. And we were thrilled that there were 12 people that actually figured out how to listen and then maybe enjoy right. it, that they kept coming back every week. You know, and it started growing from there. And then all of a sudden, you know, it just kept growing. So, you know, all of our shows have changed a little bit. And you have to be willing to do that. And you have to do that. But every show we do is a little different format. You know, our Horses in the Morning show, for instance, is live 5 days a week, an hour and a half every morning. And yet only about 0.1% listen live. The rest listen to the recorded version. So, but we do it live because it has a feel. It feels like morning drive radio. So that's what we designed that show after, was I like the Bob and Cherry show, which is a kind of national syndicated show.
Right.
And I like that show. So we designed it after Bob and Cherry. I got a female co-host that was as dynamic as Cherry. And we do segments. It's very short. It's shorter segments, shorter interviews. It's funny. It's entertaining. It's morning drive radio. So we designed that show to be like that. The Stable Scoop show is a little bit more long format, a little bit longer, and more educational segments than the morning show. But we always went with entertainment first, education second. I think people have to be entertained to be educated. And they're not going to stick around if they're not entertained. And there was plenty of that in the horse world, really dry, boring, instructional videos and things. And we said, we don't want to be that. We want to be entertainment. We want them to come to us for a chuckle, and then they maybe learn something along the way. And so we design our shows around that. Some shows have segments to them, you know, 5-10 minute segments, a training tip, a cooking segment, because all horse people still have to eat.
Right.
So we do cooking. We do everything that involves horse life. We'll do segments on health segment for your horse, health segment for you. We do all of those things in the different shows. So we really did what we wanted to listen to. And we figured, you know what? When we got bored with it, we changed it. And that's what happened. As the shows have come on, if the segment gets boring for us, we change it because we're not excited about it anymore. Probably the listener isn't. Now, we have a big enough listening base now that we also hear from listeners. But we didn't have that in the beginning. And you know, new people starting out don't either.
It sounds like it really helped that you were your own audience as well. So you were producing something that you would in turn like to listen to if somebody else was producing that same.
I could not find entertaining radio in the horse world. And that's what we went for. We went for entertaining radio. That we wanted to be the one. And that comes from back from, though, when I was doing comedy in the acting company for 10 years.
Hmm.
You know, 450 shows of comedy. That's where my niche is. That's what I like. And we have had emails along the way that say, your shows are too much fluff. And, you know, and there's still a couple radio shows out there that I think are boring, my opinion, in the horse world. And that's where I send them. So we have 130,000 people so far that don't think we're, you know, that like that fluff. And we get tons of emails. We get 30 emails for every one that says, you make me smile on the way to work. And,
that's
or cleaning a stall, you know, shoveling poop. You know, I'm here laughing in the stall and my friends are coming in saying, what are you laughing at? Because, you know, that's not a funny job.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
So when we met at Podcast Movement back in the summer 2015 here, I was just getting started with my ideas and lining up some interviews. And you gave me some advice about narrowing my target audience and my niche down, which was extremely helpful. And then you mentioned, you know, adding some additional shows if you want to reach additional audiences. But what's your advice for how niche should people go, or anything that you've learned where maybe have you started a show that maybe too narrow and you've had to expand it a little bit, or have you started a show that maybe was too broad and you narrowed it down? Now, from my experience in the horse world, I know there's hunter, jumper, dressage, eventing.
There's a million
so
niches.
It kind of there's some autumn.
There's a million micro niches.
Yeah, but they're already kind of set. In other words, if somebody's not in that world where there's defined sets, do you have any advice, or have you seen anybody else on picking
up? Actually, we've had shows that we've canceled because they just haven't gotten the audience, or we haven't found the sponsors, or a combination of both for those shows. We won't keep them around forever. Because we're a business, you know, we have to look at it that way.
Yeah, how many shows do you think you've canceled, just out of curiosity?
We canceled 5.
Oh, wow.
I think along the way. And some of those were shows that were meant to, you know, they were about a specific event, like the World Equestrian Games, and the event was over.
Right.
So the show was over, you know. So, you know, there have been certain shows that have been that way. But we've had a couple of shows that we've given 4 years, and we just couldn't develop the audience in that niche. You know, and will that change? You know, will we be able to do that same show again in the future? Probably. As that niche gets more educated and starts opening up to new technology things. Or, you know, the other thing is you don't necessarily have the right hosts in those spots.
Mm.
That's the other thing. You got to have hosts that fit your audience too and are entertaining. And, you know, we haven't always had that. You know, I have 20 terrific hosts now, but, you know, there have been some along the way that we've had to work with. So it doesn't always work, but I will tell you this. We have a show, the Driving Radio Show is our smallest show. That probably has 5,000-6,000 listeners, around that number every month. And it's weekly show. It's our smallest show, but it's our most profitable show.
Mm, interesting.
Because there's only one magazine in the world of carriage driving. There's really nothing. There's a couple of little websites in the world of carriage driving. By the way, we work with both of them, and they contribute to our show, and they have the players on their websites.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah.
So, you know, we were sponsored in the beginning by the American Driving Society, the ADS, which is the governing body for carriage driving in America. They actually pay to sponsor us every month from the beginning, 4 years ago of that show. So here we have this show that's smaller in nature for us, and I'm a carriage driver, which is why I wanted to do that show, but yet it's been the most profitable because those advertisers also don't have any place to go.
Not a lot of outlets.
Yeah, exactly. They don't have any place to really advertise. So we offer them an alternative that's affordable and, you know, and they still advertise it in the magazine, you know, but they're also advertising with us as a way to get some extra sponsorship. The other thing we do too, that we're not afraid to do rather, is we're not afraid to trade for product. If it's a product that one of the hosts or my wife or I are going to use anyway, we'll trade for advertising. And we did that. I, you know, my carriage sitting out here, we traded for advertising. And, you know, he was our official carriage sponsor for 6 months. And, you know, that's how we worked out. I would have had to buy it anyway. So I went to that same company I was going to buy it from and say, look, I like your product. You know, let's do a trade. And then we wrote up a contract and we did a trade. So we've done many of those over the time, too.
Yeah, and the fact that you're driving it around, I'm sure it's recognizable or has a logo of some sort
Every
on it.
Every picture I post is of his carriage. And, you know, all of my listeners are looking at those pictures I post with me in the carriage. And it's his carriage. So it's a smart move on his part because even though his sponsorship has, you know, has ended, that period of time ended that we were doing the ads for the exchange for the carriage, he's getting advertisement forever.
Right.
Because I'm sitting in that carriage.
And it just goes on and on. I mean, it's indefinite as long as you have that carriage.
Right.
You'll continue. And now you're talking about it on a on another podcast exactly. like this. So a question. So one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you as well is because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking about this network as well, just because I believe that we're still in the early stages of podcasts becoming mainstream. I think there's
it's finally getting exciting.
Yeah, right. So I'm interested in looking at other networks and what they're doing and how they're set up. So a couple of questions about your network. So I know you wanted to start a network from the beginning. How did you decide to have other hosts come? I know you don't host all of your shows. How did you pick and choose and bring in other people to host those shows? How did that go?
Well, there were shows that I wanted to do. I knew there's three Olympic disciplines in the horse world, and I knew I wanted to do shows about those three Olympic disciplines. By the way, only two of those threes did the show succeed. So, you know, I knew I wanted to do those shows. I also knew eventually I wanted to do a driving show because that's what I'm a carriage driver. I'm actually not a rider. And then the other shows have really evolved. I also always wanted to do my own morning drive radio show, but I knew I was never going to get a gig at a radio station to do it. So I said, well, I'm going to make my own. And that's where Horses in the Morning, our most popular show now, came along. So it's because it's the shows I wanted to do. Along the way, we owned all the shows in the beginning. So we would go out. I have a funny story if you want it.
Yeah, please. I love stories.
Hosts. I found my host for the morning show. Again, that's our most popular show, 40,000 listeners. So it's 5 days a week, an hour and a half every day, which, by the way, dispels everybody that says you can't do a long-form show
and
as
frequently,
a podcast.
Right.
Frequently. Wrong. They listen every day. So I put an ad on Facebook. It was in the early days of Facebook, and I said, I'm looking for a new host. This is 5 years ago. I'm looking for a new host. I didn't even say what it was for, but I made him leave a voicemail. And I knew right away in the voicemail I'd be able to tell.
Right.
So we had 80 voicemails. My wife and I got two bottles of wine. We each had one. We sat down one Thursday night, and we started going through these voicemails, getting drunker and drunker as we went. And then, you know, none of them, they were all kind of boring, or they just didn't fit, you know, with the morning drive radio show, which we knew exactly what we needed. We needed morning drive radio host. And then this Jamie Jennings hops on there, and she says, I've been in morning drive radio in Atlanta for 10 years. And I have horses, and I could combine the two. I could finally talk about something I really want to talk about instead of traffic and my dating life. And I said to Jennifer, that's her. I called her up within 5 minutes. Wow. This was like our 80-second voicemail. I called her up within 5 minutes.
After a bottle of wine.
Yeah, I'm not even sure what I said. But then we actually had four good candidates out of that group, and we actually had them co-host my Stable Scoop show. I had them book the guests. I had them do everything. I had them book the guests, and I just showed up to help, right, and record it and to co-host it with them. And I knew that I would have, you know, it would be a good test. And then we put those four shows out and asked for votes. And we got the votes back. We're you know, 90% for Jamie Jennings, and that's who I wanted anyway after working with them all. And that's how it came to be that we found Jamie. So we found him, people I knew, people found us. It's been all different ways.
Now, when you brought her on, did you pay her or did you offer her, you know, commission, or how did that arrangement
go? We pay our hosts, but not a lot.
Sure. So they do it for fun as well?
They do it most of them do it for the exposure because they're, you know, they're in their discipline, you know, a leader in their discipline. So they're doing it, or they have owned another business or something. They all have kind of another reason they do it. Jamie, you know, she does it because she loves it. She, you know, her husband's an Air Force fighter pilot, and she loves horses. And it really, you know, she's now 3 days a week on that show. And so she, you know, it's three mornings. She's West Coast time. So she's done by 7:30 in the morning. You know, makes a few extra bucks, gets done by 7:30 in the morning. It's perfect for her.
And you do all the production, and she just does the show, and then she's done.
Yep, she's done. We book the guests. My wife produces that show. That show's really more like a regular radio show than it is a podcast.
Right.
And we treat it like that. We treat it like a regular radio show. And I think that's the way it kind of comes across. And it, you know what? It gives people in the horse world who don't have a morning drive radio show for the horse world, it gives them a radio show.
Yeah.
So it was a smart move that we did in the beginning, I think, with that. But I think you have to have one. I only have co-hosts that I like to work with. if I don't like to work with them, they're not here.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my next questions. How do you pick a good co-host?
I know, you'll know. You just know. Yeah. If you have no synergy, if it just is not working, if you're not enjoying it, then it's not going to work. The audience isn't going to enjoy it. So I only work with hosts, people I truly like. If we truly like each other and get along, and that's all the hosts I have now, then it'll work. Now, we also apply that to, we have what we call affiliate shows now. They're shows that have come on, and they actually pay us for the production and to be on the network, but they sell their own ads. So we have two types of shows. We have Horse Radio Network-owned shows, we sell the ads, or they come on and pay us to be on the network, and we do all the post-production. They book the guests, they do all that, but we actually record it. Some of those shows I'll co-host if they pay. I'll pay extra, I'll help and co-host that. But those shows, we even it's written in a contract, we have to prove the hosts. And I've said no to affiliate shows that have tried to come on too, because it just wasn't, they didn't fit their brand.
Have you had a host that didn't work out, and how did you replace them, or did you just cancel the show or anything like that?
Early on, I had a lady who was doing really well, and then things started to go south for various reasons. And one day I had to fire her one day and had to say, we can't use you anymore. Well, she was hosting several of our shows. So we just turned around and I went out looking, and we're very proud of the fact that we have never missed an episode in 8 years of any of the shows.
Wow.
We put up reruns. We'll do whatever we have to share content among shows. We put out a show. I'm a firm believer in that. That's one of my biggest pet peeves. And if you have advertisers, you have to. They're paying for space to put out a show, right? So we had advertisers. So for those shows, so I went out and I found replacements. But I knocked on doors until I found the people I wanted to do it. And by the way, both of those shows now have grown by almost 50%.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Let me go. I didn't want to talk too much about the advertising and revenue generation part of this, but I do want to get
part.
Yeah. But I know you talk a lot about that, so I did want to ask you a little bit. How did you go about getting your first few sponsors?
Well, you can't sell numbers. Cross that out. If you're a podcaster, forget that. You can't sell CPM or whatever that term is. What is it? CPM?
Yeah, CPM.
Yeah, I had never done that. And I never will do it. We don't do that. You have to sell them on you. It's, you know, in sales, whether I was selling shows to corporations to come out and do a silly medieval feast, you know, and charge them 10 grand to show up with 20 performers at their company, you know, dinner.
Right.
And make fun of them all night. You know, with AT&T, we had some of the biggest corporations that hired us to do that.
Huh.
What you're selling is you. Whether I was selling insurance or investments or whatever you're selling, or podcasts, you're selling you. Am I wrong about that?
No, absolutely.
No, yeah. You're selling you. And that's what I've always sold. So in the beginning, that's all we had to sell. We didn't have numbers. I sold the dream. You're really selling the dream. And I would go to the sponsor, our first sponsor, you know, Kentucky Performance Products. I'll tell you who it is, because they're still advertising all these years later. They're still one of our biggest advertisers 8 years later. You know, she believed in me, and she'll tell you that.
Right.
She said, I believed in Glenn was going to make this because I knew that he's unstoppable in whatever he does. Mm. And that's what they want. They want to believe and be part of something that's growing. So now, guess what rates she still has? She still has the rates from 8 years ago.
Seriously?
I've never raised her rates because she believed in me when there was nothing. So I'm paying her back by doing that. She's still one of my biggest sponsors every month. And, you know, we're still proud of the fact that we're still together. She visits me every time she comes to Florida. We have a good time. We become good friends. So, you know, we get her involved in the shows. She's just thrilled to be part of the whole thing, especially now.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's how I paid her back, is by not being greedy later on and saying, okay, we're going to double your rates now, after she was so helpful in the beginning. You know, so, yeah, you have to sell you. You have nothing else to sell. You don't have enough numbers. You can't do CPM unless you're unless you're people that are at the top of your game, you're a famous celebrity, but when you're starting out like we did with nothing, with no listeners and nothing, you can't sell that. You don't have it. Don't even try. To this day, most of my sponsors never ask the numbers. I'll give them to them if they ask. I'm proud of them now, right?
Right.
They don't ask because they see results. One, our listeners are saying, hey, I heard about you on the radio. And they know what we're talking about. And by the way, they don't call them podcasts, my listeners. They hear about us on the radio.
Right.
That's how they refer to it. So, you know, they see the anecdotal results and an increase in sales. Their companies are growing. So, you know, one of the things that's hard to sell a podcast is, and I tell all my advertisers this, I said, you're not going to see a direct ROI. By the way, throw ROI out the window, too. Hmm. Because you're not going to see a direct ROI. Nobody goes to my website, so they're not clicking on your banners. I'll put them there because the occasional people that do, trying to remember the name of the company, will go to the website, but nobody goes there. They listen on their phones. So forget ROI. That's out the window. What you're going to see is an increase in traffic, an increase in people coming from Google, an increase in people typing your name in directly, and you're not going to have any other place to attribute it to. That's me.
Mm. That's good.
And that's what they see. You know, that's what they see. So, and then they're going, you know, then they go, well, you know, I guess it is working, you know, so because they have nowhere else to attribute it to. But if you think about magazine ads, which is what these companies are used to doing, the small to middling company, mid-sized companies, right, are used to doing magazine ads, and they can't attribute anything to that either. So, you know, that's become harder too, and they're spending thousands of dollars a month on those ads. They're not spending that with us, so it's less risky actually to do work with us. So you're selling the dream, and you're making them part of it. That is the key. You make them part of your shows, and you keep them involved with your shows year after year. We have a 70% retention rate over 8 years because they're part of our shows, and they like that.
Yeah, and I've listened to a couple of your shows just to make myself more familiar, and you actually bring the sponsors on the show to talk about some of their new products or what they have going on. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. We'll have them do. You know, with the Radiothon, the 12 hours we tried, we had the sponsors directly involved in that show. We had them part of the opener. You know, our title sponsor, one of their customer service people, actually helped us do the opener for the day. And then our first guest was the president of the company. This is one of the biggest wholesale companies in the horse world in the world. And the president of the company, I asked for the president. I wanted her. She came on within 4 minutes of the show starting of all 12 hours. She was there. We talked about her company. And then she told us her favorite holiday memory with horses. And that's how we started the day. You know, you get them involved with you in some way, whether it's new products that are being launched. Because you know what? Your listeners want to hear about new products, too, from somebody they trust, you.
Yeah. I was going to ask. I heard you on the School of Podcasting with Dave Jackson.
I love my buddy Dave.
Yeah, I thought it was
the best thing that's ever happened to the podcast.
It was a really good show. It was really good. Talk a little bit about pricing. What would you recommend for someone as far as picking a price? And I know it's different for different audiences and things like that, but I know you mentioned with him about a flat fee per show.
That's the only way we do it. We charge a flat rate per show. Mm-hmm. And then what we do is if a company wants to pay in advance, 6 months in advance, we will give them a 10% discount.
Okay. Any idea what a new show could ask for? I know that's kind of
there, you know, you're probably going to start at $50. You know, it's not going to be a lot of money at the beginning, and it, you know, wasn't for us either. And it's, you know, still not a ton of money. I've done other businesses where I'm making more money than I am now. Am I having more fun now? Yes. Than I was in those businesses. I'm having a ton more fun. But yeah, you're not going to get, you know, $1,000 an episode. You're going to get probably $50 to $200 an episode, depending on what market you're in. You know, that's still what range we're in, you know, after all of these years. Now, this next year, we'll be raising our rates a little bit because we can. You know, the demand is there.
Right.
But until the demand is there, you can't. You're gonna be happy to have those. And if you're paying your bills and making a little money, too, you're going to be thrilled. But, you know, it's going to depend on what they're doing. Our titles, we have three levels of sponsorship. We have title sponsor, and that's their name is in the title of the show, you know, driving radio show by so-and-so.
Right.
You, and then we charge them more for that, and they also get the first ad within the first 15 minutes of the show. That's what we do for title sponsors, and they show up in iTunes and everywhere else. And then we have a secondary sponsor, which is the sponsor, the ads that show up in the content of the show. And then we also have segment sponsors, you know, this training tip brought to you by. And those are even a smaller amount because it's just a shorter ad.
Right.
So we have the three levels of sponsorship that we do.
That's great. And I'm going to include a lot of these notes and things like that in my show notes as well.
Yeah. But
I think that's really, really helpful to hear you break those down into different yep. levels.
Title, regular, and then segment. By the way, we found it easier to sell segments than anything else because people like to own that piece. They feel like it's theirs. So when you, and it is theirs. So when you have the training segment brought to you by, you know, it's one of our other sponsors, the Total Saddle Fit training segment on the Dressage Radio Show. They've been doing that for years. And he likes to own that segment because he knows people like to hear those tips. And his product is directly revolved around those tips. So he's at both sides of that training tip. He's at the front with a bumper and at the end with a commercial. So he loves that fact that he owns that piece. We have one of the funniest things we do every week and one of the most popular. Our audience doubles on Fridays on Horses in the Morning because we do a segment we have for 5 years called Really Bad Ads. And it's our listeners send in bad Craigslist ads about horses or horse trailers or something for sale.
Oh,
and
that's great.
We read them and make holy fun of them. And we do it for a half an hour. It's the last thing we do on the show on Fridays. It ends the week. It's most, you see our listener numbers just quadruple on Fridays. And we give a prize every week that's donated to the winner. We pick a winner every week. Mm-hmm. We'll have 150, 200 ads every week that my wife has to shuffle through. And we pick 12. And but that's our most popular segment, and that's branded and owned by a manure fork company because we thought that was appropriate, right? And it's expensive manure forks. I mean, these are $80 to $250 manure forks. They're most expensive in the industry, and we're the only advertising he does now because people buy the manure forks and because they hear them on really bad ads.
I like that a lot. Any tips that you hear around the podcast world as far as maybe marketing or building an audience that are just wrong or misleading? Do you, anything that seems like it's common knowledge, but based on your experience, you feel like people are being misled?
Well, and you saw this probably at Podcast Movement. I know I probably make other podcasters mad, but you know, I didn't grow up in the podcasting world until I went to the Florida Podcasting Podfest, you know, last year, and that was in February. I was not involved in the world of podcasting. I was just doing it.
Right.
Right? I was just out there doing it on my own. I didn't know anything. I didn't know any rules. I hadn't looked around for any other, you know, I listened to a couple podcasts, but, you know, I wasn't involved in, if you know what I mean, by the world of podcasting.
Right, right.
So until I went down there, I went, wow, there's other people doing this and, you know, actually talking about it. Then I went to Podcast Movement. But one of the things was there seems to be these rules developing in podcasting.
This is the same in social media. People think there's all kinds of rules about how to use Twitter or not use Twitter.
That's all crap.
Yeah.
You know, it is crap. It's you make your rules. We're doing things, you know, people told us, how many times did you hear a podcast moving? You have to keep your podcast short because nobody listens more than 20 minutes to half an hour.
Yeah, I mean, over and over again.
Over and over again. Our most popular show, 40,000 listeners every day, is an hour and a half, 5 days a week.
Yeah.
So that's just crap. You know, it's what expectations you give your audience. And if your show's good, they're going to allow the time to listen. They're going to book it into their schedule to listen. So it's all up to you to develop that contract with your audience. And once you develop that contract, you better damn well live up to it. So, you know, those are the other couple other things that drive me nuts, my pet peeves, because we're so much sticklers about it. If you want to make a living doing this someday with sponsors and advertisers, you can't skip episodes. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a thread on one of the Facebook pages, you probably saw it, where a guy asked, you know, I don't feel like basically doing a show this week because I don't feel like I have great content. I'm just going to skip this week. Well, if I'm a sponsor down the line and I see you've skipped a bunch of weeks, am I going to put any faith in you?
No, not at all. And it's going to damage the reputation for a long time.
And, you know, a lot of the people were saying, well, if you don't have, you know, great content to put out, I'd rather you skipped. Well, that's great if you're doing it as a hobby. go ahead, skip all you want. But if you want to actually make money on this someday, you got to be professional. You put out a show, even if it's shorter. We'll do that. Some weeks we intentionally do shorter shows. We'll cut the length of the show in half about every 6 weeks because I want people wanting more the next week, going, oh, man, it was only half an hour this week. You know, I want them more, wanting more next week. So that's one of my pet peeves. There are no rules. You know, we just did a 12-hour radiothon, and it was hugely successful. We made money our first year on it. We had a ton of listeners. We had 100 of our listeners send in voicemails where they sang songs and wrote poems. And guess what all those songs and poems were about? The Horse Radio Network and the host. You know, we had 200 callers. If I had went to the podcast movement and said we were going to do this, they would have told me I was nuts. We had 17 sponsors. We gave away $3,000 in product. And, you know, had 30 guests, including Charlie Daniels and Bob Baffert, American Pharoah's trainer. You know, they would have told me I was nuts, wouldn't they have, most of them?
I think what you're saying here, and I want to make sure this is very clear to people, is that when you know your audience and you know your audience, then forget what everybody else is. Because what might work in the gaming industry or what might work in comedy might not work in the horse world. And if you know your audience, then you know what you can bring to them.
That's exactly right. But don't, you know, listen and learn, but don't take it as gospel.
Yeah, that's good.
Don't be afraid to try. But if you're going to do this, and this is my biggest lesson, if you're going to do this and expect to make money and have it be your full-time business or even a part-time business, but you're making money at it, you can't treat it like it's a plaything. You have to think of it as a business. If you're not thinking of it as a business, you're never going to be able to convince a sponsor to think of it as a business.
Yeah, and it's like if it's a brick and mortar store and you show up and it's just closed from time to time, eventually people are just going to stop coming by.
Well, yeah, sooner than later. It's true, because you're making a contract with your audience. The first episode you put out, that's a contract. You're saying, I'm going to be here every week or, you know, twice a month, whatever it is, or daily, you know, whatever it is, I'm going to be here for you. And they kind of like the show. They listen to the first couple and go, okay, well, I'm going to contract with you an hour a week. And then you don't show up. You just stood me up. By the way, I'll give you twice. I'll give you the first time that something happened. The second time, I'm not listening to your show anymore because you broke our contract.
I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but just a couple of questions. Do you have any podcasts that you listen to that you really love?
Yeah, I like Tom Merritt's Daily Tech News.
Okay.
Because that's where I get my tech news, is through Tom. So I do like that one. I love I email her almost every week. I love Katie Kermitzos's Biz Women Rock. I like her delivery, her style. I like the women she has on. I learn a lot from that show. Don't tell her, but it guys listen too. And then, you know, I listen to School of Podcasting, Dave Jackson. I'm not just saying that, you know. I do listen to his show every week because he kind of keeps me up on the world of podcasting.
Right.
You know, he does news about, you listen to that show too. So, you know, he does news about podcasting, things like that. I love Rotten Tomatoes podcast. Rotten Tomatoes, the movie rating site, they have a great podcast. And that's how I learned what movies are coming up that week.
What do you think makes a podcast remarkable?
Entertaining. It has to be entertaining. You know, Dave does that show by himself, and I can't do that. I always have co-hosts because they make me, and I always hire co-hosts better than me.
Right.
They're funnier, they're more entertaining, they're more opinionated, something. They're better than me because they make me look good. So, you know, Dave does that show himself, but he's entertaining. He makes it fun. And I think entertainment first, education second. That's just me. I'm an entertainer. That's what I do. So, you know, I'm a true believer in that. So I listen to podcasts that are entertaining. Another one I've listened to for 8 years is GizWiz. That was one of Twit's podcasts about products with Dick DiBartolo of Mad Magazine fame. And because it's entertaining, it's light, it's entertaining. And the other one I really like, my newest one, is Chris Kremitzos, who does Story Jam Theater.
Okay.
That's like a tiny TED podcast, 10 minutes.
Right.
But I like the stories and I like how he produces it. So, you know, those are the ones I listen to the most.
Does any one of those or one that you didn't mention stand out as maybe the most remarkable one, the most unique?
Well, you know, I think Daily Tech News is big because Tom is big. You know, he's a big name in the tech world.
Right.
You know, they take in a ton of money every month with Patreon. You know, I think, and you want to know what the other one I listen to?
Yeah, please.
Still to this day, 4 hours is Bob and Cherry. and they are a mainstream radio that just put it out as a podcast. Now, you know, because it's mainstream radio, morning drive radio, they take all the commercials out and their podcast, get this, is 15 to 20 minutes every hour. That's how much they actually talk in mainstream radio.
Wow. Yeah.
It's 15 to 20 minutes. So the podcast is 4 to like 15 minute segments. The rest is all commercials and, you know, weather and news and
all
that.
Yeah, and that's why I listen to podcasts instead of radio.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, they, you know, boy, if we had our morning show, we'd only talk 15 minutes for the hour and a half.
Right.
But yeah, so I still listen to them every day, and they're what I designed our morning show after was Bob and Cherry.
That's great. Do you have any recommended resources where that you go or you recommend websites or other podcasts where people can learn more about building an audience or about you know, specific niches or marketing, things like
there's
that?
There's a ton of good podcasts on podcasting. There's a lot of them out there. The Facebook pages are good too. I really like, do you want me to mention the names of a couple of them?
Yeah, please. And I'll include the links.
Well, Podcasters Hangout, which I think you're in.
Yep, I'm in there.
The Podcast Movement has one too that's pretty active. I think Podcasters Hangout's probably the most active for how to do stuff. I really like that one for how to do stuff. I highly recommend if you're getting into podcasting, you need to go back and listen to, and I hate to plug it again, but I learn a lot and I've been doing this for 8 years, is School of Podcasting podcast. Because he goes over the nitty gritty stuff and he reviews everything. So microphones, everything. I mean, just everything. He's seen it and reviewed it. To this day, if I have a question about a new service, I talk to him. I write to him first because I know he's going to have reviewed it already.
Yeah.
So I trust, you know, Dave Jackson over at School of Podcasting.
Before we sign off, where's the best place that people can go to learn more about you or to check out what you're doing?
HorseRadioNetwork.com and get our app. Go to the App Store, iOS or Android, and search for Horse Radio Network. It's a free and easy to use, and we have almost 25,000 people now that have downloaded it. So
that's great.
Yeah, our app is how a lot of people listen now.
Well, Glenn, I appreciate your time. This has been really insightful. I love the stories and all the helpful information that you've given. So let me just say again, thank you for your time. And I'll be keeping in touch with you and following what you're doing.
Sounds good.
You take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Remarkable, part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. I appreciate you taking time to join me today and listening, and hope you learned as much as I did. If you've enjoyed this episode or previous episodes of Remarkable, please do me a quick favor and share it with someone you know that would enjoy it as well. You can find my notes, relevant links, and a full transcript of this podcast at supersimple.com/Glenn. That's SUPERSIMPL.com/GLENN. This episode of Remarkable is sponsored by OnePriceTaxes.com. Life is full of surprises. Filing your taxes shouldn't be. OnePrice Taxes has been making online tax filing easy, accurate, and affordable since 2007. State returns are included for free, and unlike other online tax filing sites, there are no hidden fees guaranteed. When you visit OnePriceTaxes.com today, use code REMARKABLE to save 10% when you check out. Our theme music was composed by Julio Gonzalez at Zymer. Zymer, or Remix spelled backwards, offers sound design and audio post-production for podcasts, video, audiobooks, game apps, and radio. Learn more or contact them today at Zymer.co. That's Zymer.co. Mention that you heard them here on the Remarkable Podcast and save 50% off of any of their services. And if you would like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course designed to help you grow your audience, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. That's it for today, and until next week, take care.